Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. with Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. Every Friday, we talk to Alexander Zeldin. Alexander is the managing editor of a great website, Decider.com. If you're a fan of show business or television, you want to visit Decider.com. How are things, Alex? Everything good?
Doing great. Closing out the week. Very exciting.
Yeah. Let's start out with a story that I find very, very peculiar, and you might have to explain it a little bit, because I've read through it twice, and I'm not sure I fully understand what's going on here. But the Satanic Temple is suing Netflix over an episode of Sabrina, right?
Yes, of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, not the old show with Melissa Joan Hart. They weren't waiting a good long while for it. If you haven't watched Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is delightful and awesome, and you should definitely check out, it's much darker than the original series. They go to a school called the Academy of the Unseen Arts that worships Satan. Witches go there, and right in the center is an enormous statue of Baphomet, an aspect of Satan, with two children very lovingly looking up at him. And it's a very funny visual in the series, but it turns out it's an almost exact reproduction of a statue that was made by the Satanic Temple to make a point about putting the Ten Commandments outside schools in Oklahoma City.
Is the Satanic Temple also a television show?
Should be.
No, what is it?
It's a
church.
The real Satanic Temple.
Really?
People
yeah.
who actually worship Satan. And I don't want to get too much into Satan worship, but I will say that they consider it a legitimate religion. They are not, you know, sacrificing babies or being witches or anything like that. They were basically saying, hey, if you can put enormous Ten Commandments outside of a school, look, we can put this enormous statue of the devil. That's the point that they were making.
Yeah.
But since Sabrina is, according to them, making money off of it, they're suing the show and Netflix for $50 million. That's the story. I don't know if that makes any more sense now that I've explained it.
It makes sense, but I still don't understand. You would think something like that, unless they're doing it for publicity. Are they doing it for publicity, do you think, or do they really expect to get $50 million out of this?
Well, I think you're right about the publicity thing. According to their suit, it cost them about $100,000 to design and build the statue. And certainly Sabrina isn't necessarily saying, hey, you guys, go be Satanists. It's perhaps a little more against that.
Yeah.
But they're saying that it's specifically attacking them as a religion. It's trying to cause satanic panic. For those of us who are alive in the 80s, you probably well know what that is, and that was not particularly good for Satanists. So that's the grounds of their suit. But ultimately, yeah, I think they are, just like with the statue, they're trying to drum up publicity and make people realize that they're at least a semi-legitimate outfit versus people who are, you know, eating babies and cooking them for
dinner. Sure, of course.
You know, we had Rich Coe's, a.k.a. Sven Gulli, on the air with us and said he got a shout-out. It was on Sabrina, wasn't it?
I think it was on Sabrina.
I hope they don't come after him now.
I hope they don't. No, it would be horrible if that happened. So, is this unprecedented? I don't remember anything ever like this coming up, has it?
I don't think so. Certainly not from the Church of Satan.
No.
Necessarily. There's certainly been plenty of religious suits. People were very upset over The Last Temptation of Christ. And
I remember.
Lots of movies. Yeah, there are lots of movies that take on, Christianity or Catholicism have come under fire back in the day. But yeah, this is definitely from the other side, I think, the first time we've seen this.
If you're the producers of this show, the Sabrina show, can't you just send them a nice apology and say, all right, we didn't realize that it would upset you so much. We won't do it in the future. Let's just be friends to the Satan worshipers. Will that be enough, or do they want their money?
I don't think they're going to take it to court. I do think, this is speaking from my area of no legal expertise whatsoever, I think just because the statue is actually so close, like they basically took that statue and put it on the show, they probably will have to pay some money if, in fact, they did do the intellectual property rights for the statue. But ultimately, it's all meant in good fun.
Sure.
There's nothing bad that's being said in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Yeah.
And it's a fun mashup that ultimately paints the witch characters, the ones who worship Satan, in a good light. They're mostly good people. So I don't think it's hurting anybody.
All right. Let's move to Walking Dead. A huge episode last week, and we already knew this in advance, but the star of the show, Andrew Lincoln, was leaving the show. He is no longer on Walking Dead.
What Spoiler alert in case people haven't caught up yet.
But AMC, went out of their way to
misled us
for weeks. In some ways, they misled us, but I'm not. Wendy's disappointed in the way things played out. I like the way things played out.
I could see both sides of it, honestly. I can understand. I don't know how openly, maybe we can get a big spoiler alert here. But certainly they were plugging for weeks and weeks and weeks that this was Andrew Lincoln's last episode. But here comes the spoiler. Turns out it wasn't Rick's last experience with The Walking Dead. He's, as far as they're saying, he's not coming back to Walking Dead, but they are picking up immediately after what happens with Rick at the end of the episode and following him into three movie length. I hesitate to call them movies because they may be on TV, they may be theatrically, we're not sure yet, but they're going to be starting filming next year. So Rick is going to get essentially his own spin-off show while Walking Dead continues without him.
Was
and there's
the
some
plan
other things
along?
That happened towards the end of the episode.
Was that always their plan?
Yes.
It was.
I don't
there was
know
a
that
point
I.
Last season.
I have mixed emotions, like you, Alexander. I mean, I do see both sides of it, and part of me is like, oh, this is kind of unique, but they fooled us.
Mm-hmm. There was, for fans of the show, they know this very well, for those who didn't watch it, there was a huge flap in, I believe, season 6, when Steven Yeun's character looked like he died, down to being surrounded by zombies,
yeah.
You saw guts being pulled out, and they said, they were very cagey about it for a very long time, to the point where fans became furious about it, and it later turned out that he actually had escaped under a dumpster, it was somebody else's guts that were being eaten, so fans were very angry, and that's honestly, I think, one of the first dinks in the show's armor that happened. So I think what they did here was they knew they were going to do this plot point, they knew they needed to get Rick off the show and into these movies in some big way. So the thing that I do like is I appreciate the fact that as soon as the episode ended, they said, hey, don't worry, the story is going to be continued. You know, they didn't play coy until next year and then said, surprise, there's a bunch of Rick movies, he's coming back. Because I think ultimately that would have hurt them in an even bigger way than the Glenn thing happened. But ultimately, you could also ask, do they need Walking Dead movies at this point, given that the franchise is really flagging in terms of viewers?
Interesting. Speaking of dinks in the armor, we'll talk about Outlaw King, Chris Pine's new movie that's on Netflix.
Mighty Pine.
Yeah, we'll get to that next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Jasmine, send that to ESPN. That's Wendy's demo tape for ESPN. Bill left. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin from TheDecider.com. Go to Decider.com. It's right there on your internet. You'll learn a bunch of things about great TV. I'm curious about the ratings over at Roseanne. Or now it's the Conners. But a couple of weeks ago, I know they had a huge ratings week, their first week back. But how have the ratings held up?
Well, interesting note about that. We actually have a story coming up next week. One of our writers, who's our Conners expert, Brett White, has been calling together the numbers. And without spoiling the story too much, I will spoil it, but it's one of the biggest hits of the season still.
Yes.
Granted, the little asterisk there is that most of broadcast TV isn't doing that great. But I believe the numbers that he crunched found that other than Old Sheldon and Young Sheldon, it's the number three comedy of the season so far. So it's doing pretty well. I think it's going to kick it around for a while. It's not necessarily Roseanne level, but
yeah.
I kind of like it.
Still, yeah. Honestly, I think it's better in a certain way. It seems a little freer of the whole Roseanne of it all, which is nice.
You knew that first week back they couldn't go wrong because there was such a high curiosity factor. But the true tale is weeks 2, 3, 4, and 5, and like you said, so far they're doing all right.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched the show as religiously as some other members of the staff, but from discussions that we've had around here at Decider, it certainly seems like Roseanne was that albatross around the neck of the show. She is like nobody else on TV, but at the same time, having her on the show made it, of course, all about her, and everybody else was just the supporting cast. Here, by taking her out of the equation, it feels like more of a rounded out cast, more of a rounded out show, and all these wonderful actors are getting more time on screen, which is great.
Alex, of the Rebirth shows, of the shows that were on a long time ago and then came back, the one I was looking forward to the most is Mad About You. It hasn't aired yet. I know they've shot a bunch of them. When will that be on TV?
We still don't know at this point. There's no real new news about Mad About You. I would expect upfronts are in May, usually.
Yeah.
So I expect we won't really hear any news about it until then. Certainly, NBC is probably going to hold it back. But NBC is doing really well right now for broadcast networks. So they don't need the Mad About You on the schedule quite yet. Mm-hmm. So I think they'll probably, if anything, deploy it for next season.
All right.
That would be my guess at this
All
point.
Right. That's good. Yesterday with Dean Richards, who does our movie reviews, he told us about this movie, Outlaw King, and they're doing something kind of novel with it. They're opening it both in theaters and on Netflix at the exact same time. What's the thought process there?
This is actually something that Netflix is going to start doing more frequently, it seems like, particularly going into December. We have a number of movies, including Outlaw King, Roma, even Andy Serkis's Jungle Book adaptation, Mowgli, is getting a limited theatrical release. And it's all about the Oscars. Actually, there's two things, to be fair. There's the Oscars. It gives it a shot at getting nominated if it's in theaters first for a couple of weeks. But also, it's kind of a make-good in a certain way for the creators. I say this specifically when it comes to Mowgli. Another one of our writers, Joe Reed, put up a piece about this yesterday. Mowgli doesn't look that good. But Andy Serkis is a name director. Netflix wants to be in the business. So if they put it in theaters for 2 weeks, it makes him happy. On the other hand, with Outlaw King, I think they're really trying to go for Oscars for that prestige, for, say, Chris Pine's performance in that, or Alfonso Cuarón directing Roma. They really want to put them in the conversation with everybody else.
For a lot of people, though, the mindset will be, why would I pay money in a theater? I get Netflix there in my house. I'm already paying a subscription. What's the big deal? I'll watch it on TV. But the experience is so different seeing in a theater, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, particularly for something like Aroma, or maybe less so for Outlaw King, which seems to be getting mixed reaction from audiences. But Roma is so gorgeous, you're going to want to see it on the biggest screen possible so you can really experience it, versus sitting at home, watching on Netflix, pausing to go get some snacks. That's not exactly how a prestige filmmaker wants you to experience their movie.
Right.
And on the Netflix side of things, they're making billions of dollars at this point. If they lose a little money putting in theaters for 2 weeks, that costs them like half a season of Atypical, you know?
Mm-hmm. Last week, you told us about a show called Homecoming. This is the show, the series with Julia Roberts and Bobby Cannavale. I'm three episodes in. I'm really enjoying it. Wendy, you've seen one or two.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't, but I love Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah, he's always good. He's always good. What has been the reaction to the show so far, Homecoming? I think it's really interesting.
I think I said this last week, but it's one of my absolute favorite shows of the year, and it just builds and builds so well. The performances are great. It shot so well. Generally, those who have seen it have reacted really well to it, but given a star of the caliber of Julia Roberts, it hasn't really popped yet. It hasn't really caught the imagination of people, and I hope that people are going to come around to it over time as they realize that it's there, that it'll be one of those slow burn binges instead of an immediate flash in the pan. Right now, not a lot of people are talking about it.
Isn't that something?
I'm
very surprised. I think you'd like it.
I saw the previews. It looked really good, and I kind of forgot about it, to be honest with you.
You know what's interesting? You brought this up a little bit last week with us, Alex, is it's a drama, and it's a very weird, eerie storyline, but it can be funny. There are parts where it's funny, and there's a little sequence going on in one of the episodes. I don't want to give too much away, where it's shot very much like a made-for-TV movie from the 70s, just the way the reactions are. And I don't know how intentional that was, but it fit the weirdness of the show. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, very much so. You know, something that you might not know going in, but they didn't actually compose any music for the show. They reused pieces of music from Hitchcock and other suspense movie thrillers of that type, and then shot it in a very similar way. Sam Esmail, who directed all the episodes, he created Mr. Robot for USA, gave it this very specific look. And as it goes on, in particular, there are shots that are straight out of Vertigo or North by Northwest.
Yeah.
So it really has that feel to it. I think, if anything, the fact that they were so cagey about what it was about and the marketing was just Julia Roberts sitting on a chair,
yeah,
it probably hurt it a lot.
Yeah.
Anybody looking for a good quick binge, because it's 10 episodes, all about a half an hour long, definitely check it out.
It goes by fast. One other thing about it is, remember how when the Haunting of Hill House came out, and we talked about how in one particular episode, there are shots that go on for minutes at a time, unbroken shots where the camera's just swirling around and making you dizzy, and it's all intentional. In the first episode, when you first get to meet the character and the building she works in, they do this long shot that goes all through the building, through walls and over ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
I can't for the life of me figure out how they did it, because architecturally it's almost impossible to pull that off, but mm-hmm. it's masterful to watch.
That's something that Sam Esmail plays with quite a bit. For fans of Mr. Robot, they know this, but there's an episode last season that is all one shot long, and it's one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen in my life, and it does the same thing. It follows characters up elevators through a riot that's happening on various floors of this building. It's stunning, and I agree with you. You watch something like that, and you have no idea how they actually
Yeah, it's so ambitious.
I want to give a shout out to my friend Lisa K. Nelson, who's a writer for the Kids Are All Right show. It's on ABC at 7:30 on Tuesdays. They got picked up. They're getting the back nine. I don't know what that means.
Nine additional episodes to what they've already shot.
Okay, and Michael Kudlitz, who plays the dad on that show, will be on our show on Tuesday.
Excellent, excellent. Alexander, great to talk to you. We'll see you in a week.
All right. Have a great week, guys.
That's Alexander Zelbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. Great website, Decider.com. We'll take a break and then get you more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.